The United States spent $725 billion on national defense in fiscal year 2020. That's a number that far outpaces defense spending by other Western nations in total dollars and in percent of the national budget. But even while U.S. taxpayers were making it rain on the Department of Defense, military families are going hungry. According to the Military Family Advisory Network, one in eight military families faces some form of food insecurity. The network also indicates that nearly a quarter of military families with school-aged children report that their children receive free or reduced meals at school.
As a soldier, you don't expect for your family to have to go hungry.
Rotisha Adams is a veteran and a current military spouse. She serves as community outreach chairperson with the Fort Hood Spouses Club. When I spoke with Rotisha, she told me about how the constant and often unexpected moves associated with military life generate significant expenses that can create or worsen food insecurity for families.
A PCS move is a permanent change of station. So that's when the soldiers go to a new duty station for an assignment. And during those moves, families, they have to pay for food on the way. They have to pay for hotels on the way. And sometimes a lot of the spouses or the service member don't know how to get reimbursed for those costs of moving and providing food to their families. Sometimes, you know, we move from the West Coast to the East Coast. That's like a week's trip to get our families there. So for that week, we're, footing the bill for food, housing, things of that nature. So, it takes a toll on the income.
She also pointed to the ways that a military code of service and self-reliance can sometimes deter those in need from asking for help.
There may be families who are still going hungry, but are too prideful to go and get that help or to ask for help.
I also spoke about food insecurity in the military with Shannon Razadin, the president of Military Family Advisory Network.
Food insecurity is essentially when you are worried or concerned about having enough to make ends meet related to food. And so as an organization, when we've been looking at food insecurity among military families, we've used the USDA's six-item short form food security scale to help us not only figure out if families are food insecure, but also where they're falling on the spectrum of food insecurity.
Let me start by asking if this is a relatively new problem. I can absolutely remember coming from kind of a working class, community in Virginia. I had friends who right after high school enlisted in part because it was their sense that being in the military meant that they wouldn't have these kinds of insecurities. Not that it would make them rich, but just that they would have some basic security around housing, food, and the ability to kind of move into adulthood without the kind of terror that a lot of young people were facing, especially if they weren't going to college, about how to make ends meet.
Absolutely. And so when we look at food insecurity, it is not a new problem for military families. COVID, of course, has made it worse for many. But when we've been looking at this over the last few years, we've seen that this is not a new phenomenon. When we first started hearing about this from our advisory board who worked at a food bank down in the Norfolk, Virginia area, she was telling us of families who were coming in regularly to get food support. And so our research team in multiple national studies took a look at this, and we found that before the pandemic, one in eight military families nationally who responded to our survey was experiencing food insecurity. When we drill that down into specific locations, we found that in some areas like Washington State, that number went up to one in five. And then in Virginia, North Carolina, and Texas, that number was at one in six. Then when we took a step back and found that during the pandemic, that number nationally went to one in five. And so as an organization, we know that COVID has, of course, exacerbated this issue, just as it has for many people across the country and around the world. But we also know that we need to get food to families immediately while we work to develop long-term solutions.
Now, food insecurity is a crisis for many communities, but help us to understand the ways that military families might be even more cut off from the, some of the solutions and or at least the kind of social safety net that we have. Why aren't these families eligible for SNAP and other federal food assistance?
This is a really complex issue for military families. And I'll start with the SNAP component, which is often known or referred to as food stamps. Because the basic allowance for housing is factored in as income, most military families are not eligible for SNAP. They are eligible for programs in many cases like the free and reduced price meals program at schools and also WIC, but we're seeing families show up and apply to get support through SNAP and they're turned away because that basic allowance for housing is factored in as income. So there are policy solutions that are in the works right now as it relates to the Farm Bill and other legislative efforts to try to pull the basic allowance for housing out so that it's not a component of eligibility for military families. But as you look at the landscape and what military families go through, military families move on average every 2.5 years. And when you have that constant restart, it's really hard to understand the landscape and what resources might be available on a local level. And that coupled with issues with military spouse unemployment, which has been a perennial issue, it's really been hard for military families to get that second income that so many of us really rely on. And so you look at things like childcare, you look at things like the frequent move, military spouse unemployment. You know, when you take that step back, it's not all that surprising that military families would be having a hard time making ends meet. We're seeing the highest frequency of food insecurity among our junior and middle enlisted families who have children. And so as we've been working on solutions related to this issue, we're seeing a lot of families. We launched earlier this year a 1 million meals challenge to provide the equivalent of 1 million meals for military families over the course of the year. I'm proud to say that we have passed the 800,000 mark and we expect to hit our millionth meal later this month. But as these drive-through events, you'll see cars filled with children going through, and we're trying to create an environment of fun where people can, one, get the support that they need, but this month they're meeting Santa. Last month they got hand-painted pumpkins, and we're trying to really support these families and celebrate the fact that they are seeking out this help and support because it is so important.
So on the one hand, I appreciate it. My heart kind of, you know, leaps up in joy of the idea of kids not, you know, feeling bad or stigmatized in this line, but like it's an opportunity to see Santa. On the other hand, I think, is there some reason we're just not paying our enlisted members enough that especially if we know that they've got to move and as a result, their spouses are going to have, you know, difficulty with, you know, finding employment long term. And if they have young children, right, making it that much harder. Why don't we just pay the people in our military enough so that they can purchase food or trip to Santa or whatever else is necessary?
Right. So the compensation package is absolutely a component of this. The GAO released a report earlier this year that took a look at the basic allowance for housing too, and how in many locations it's inadequate. So basic allowance for housing is designed to cover 95% of housing expenses as well as utilities. But for many places, it's not even getting close to that. So you look at high cost of living areas in some cases where military families are, and you see the food insecurity component too. So it's a very complex web, and we're excited and grateful that the Department of Defense is now looking at this issue. But in the meantime, while these policy solutions are being worked on, organizations like the Military Family Advisory Network are really stepping in to fill that gap.
So this is a great point that when we look at our current federal leadership, obviously the Biden family in a very personal way, right, is deeply connected with questions of not only veterans, but of active duty military. Do you have a sense that the Biden administration, as well as kind of on the legislative side, are looking for and partnering with you and other advocacy organizations to find solutions?
Absolutely. So Dr. Biden has outlined food insecurity as a priority area in joining forces. And so this issue does have the attention of the highest levels of government. And that's because the data is there. That's because we've been able to put a spotlight on this issue thanks to media attention and opportunities like today. And we're grateful for that and know that these solutions are not going to happen overnight and know that this problem is going to take a long time to resolve. But we are grateful that we have this high level of attention and that we've been able to because of the support of people who are passionate and who firmly believe that military families should not have to worry about where their next meals come from. That has allowed us to really fill that gap in the meantime.
I got to say the first time that I became sort of aware of the level of need with military families around these questions is in my work with the North Carolina Diaper Bank and the mm-hmm. level of diaper insecurity that military families have. I'm here in North Carolina, and our Cape Fear, Fayetteville sort of military base area diaper bank serves primarily actually military families. So I'm wondering if there are other needs, so that the food need is clear. You've talked a little bit about whether or not that housing allowance is sufficient. Are there other clear needs facing our military families that we just need to be sure the public is aware of?
A lot of it, when you think about the moves that are happening every 2 years, military families, and during the pandemic in particular, need to feel like they are part of a community. We see loneliness and the connection between loneliness and issues like food insecurity. And so there's an opportunity for people to introduce themselves, to help military families get acclimated to a new town, a new community, a new school, new sports team, and just being aware that military families are in your community, that we are moving often, and this life is incredibly transient. The other piece that's really important to note is there's a culture of resilience among military families. And so there's almost a suck it up, buttercup mentality, and the thought that there's always someone who is a little bit worse off than you. And so by encouraging people and celebrating people when they get the support that they need and when they seek out what their family might need help with, that's a great thing. And that makes it easier for others in the community to get that support too. And so offering the support before people have to ask for it is always a good step in the right direction. And it helps to lower that stigma for so many.
Shannon Razadin, thank you for joining us on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.